Let me review what I said yesterday. What I said was this. Point one, the basic problem with our children that we must wrestle with if we're going to be effective parents is the problem of foolishness, most simply defined as wanting your own way, or more deeply, think of foolishness more as a conviction or a belief. People do what you believe is true. You stop at a gas station and put gas in your car because you have a conviction, you have a belief, you have a knowledge that your car will not run without gas. So you have a certain conviction that controls your behavior. It's what you believe that controls what you do. And children have a basic conviction that in order to be happy, they need to get their own way. That's foolishness. And every child has it in abundance. The second point that I made is that the basic need of all children is a deep sense of personal worth. My kids need to regard themselves as worthwhile, but they foolishly pursue wrong ways to meet those needs. That's the combination of points one and two. Point one, the problem is foolishness. Point two is the basic need of the deep sense of personal worth, and my children go about getting those needs met in foolish ways. As a result of that, as a result of them not really being willing, naturally speaking, to subordinate themselves to God's authority to live the kind of life which he says will in fact bring a sense of significance, which in fact will bring a good sense of personal worth, because they simply don't do that naturally, their self-esteem is in trouble. And as a result of that, what they do to bolster their sagging self-esteem in their foolishness is to pursue one of four goals. And if you as a parent, if I as a parent, and to understand my children and know how to deal effectively with them, I must understand the goal of their misbehavior, because there are different strategies for dealing with different goals. We're going to be talking about raw foolishness, and what do you do when your child simply and very clearly defiantly sets aside your authority to get his way. He just simply and plainly believes that the way to be happy is to get his way, so nuts to you, Dad. What do you do in that instance? We'll discuss that this morning. But there are a number of times when it doesn't seem to be quite as clear a responsible rejection of authority. As opposed to that, they seem to be pursuing one of these wrong goals to bolster their sagging self-esteem. The four goals are, one, attention, which means what? More than just the concept of being noticed, that's included, but more than that. What do I mean by this idea of attention? Somebody take care of me, make my life go smoothly without my having to be responsibly involved. Whether that's responsible involvement in cleaning up your room, responsible involvement in taking your bike at night, responsible involvement in obeying Dad's rules in terms of not smoking pot, responsible involvement in terms of adhering to truth as opposed to telling lies, children pursue attention. The second thing that they pursue, the second goal is? And power in what sense? Over parents' emotions, yes. Remember the riots of the 60s? All the college students who were burning buildings and this sort of a thing. My own judgment is that the basic dynamic underneath much of that was a desire for power. I can have a sense of impact. I can believe that somehow I matter. Kids have a desperate need to believe that somehow they matter. A fellow by the name of Bruno Bettelheim is a psychoanalyst out of Chicago who works primarily with autistic children, children who are very severely disturbed, and he takes the position that there are three steps in child training or in child development. The first step is the what he calls the nominal step, or the step of naming one's environment. A child comes out of mother and is in a very confusing array of noisy stimuli. The first thing the child tries to do as he begins to acquire language is to name his environment. There's a chair, there's a table, there's mommy, there's daddy. That's stage one. The second stage a child goes through is to predict his environment. First he names, secondly he predicts his environment. B follows A. When car door slams, Dad will be indoor in 10 seconds. The third thing child does is to try to influence his environment, from naming to predicting to influence. I have a basic need to be significant, a basic need to sense that there's impact. I want power. I want to have an impact on my world. A little baby who, when he shakes around in his crib and his mobile moves and he begins to smile and shake some more, the beginnings of power, the beginnings of I'm making an impact in my world. Now, there's a right way to make impact. But when that right way is denied, the right way being to subordinate yourself to the purposes of God and to make an impact for eternity according to his plan, when that way is lost, then what I'm left with is just having power over you. If I can have a bigger car, if I can wear better clothes, or if I'm a youngster, What do I have available to me with mother and dad? Upsetting them. Goal number two, power. Goal number three, revenge. If you get in my way, I want to go here. You block it. How do I feel against you? I feel angry. I feel frustrated. How do you feel when a goal that you passionately desire is blocked? You're in a room and you want to get out and the door sticks. How do you feel towards the door? Not very kindly. You feel angry. What do you often do to the door? Just what your kids do to you, emotionally. When you block a goal which they think they need the second piece of cake and you think not, rather than agreeing with your wisdom, typically they're angry with you for blocking what they think is the most important thing in the world at that moment to make them happy, which is the second piece of cake. Therefore, there's going to be revenge motivation. That's natural. That happens in all of our angelic children. The fourth goal, withdrawal. The thought that my self-esteem can't take any more blows. I've gotten up in front of groups and I've made a mess. Therefore, I don't want to get up in front of groups again. I want to withdraw from responsibility. I don't want to go and to be exposed to humiliation. So there are four goals that we're going to need to be concerned with in knowing how to deal with our children. We have to identify those goals and deal with them effectively. This morning we're going to be talking about discipline primarily. How to deal, first of all, with foolishness. How to deal with raw foolishness, which all of our kids will exhibit. All of our kids will exhibit. How to deal with raw foolishness. And then we're going to be discussing, secondly, how to respond to the kinds of behaviors that pursue one of these four goals. You know what I think? I think that the battle is often won or lost, not in those big problems that you have, but the everyday interactions you have with your child. Not in the big ones, but in the everyday interactions. Like, what is breakfast like in your home? Is it the kind of thing where someone's coming late and they just don't want the runny eggs that you serve and they complain about the brittle toast? And then dad kind of saunters in about 20 minutes late, picks up his paper, sits down and reads and says, coffee's cold. And then you as mother get kind of irritated and the kids just sit there and kind of obnoxiously mouth you about how bad things are. In kind of quiet sorts of ways. And inside you just go bananas. How do you deal with all these little kind of circumstances? At the time when you spank? Some of you wives would like to have the opportunity to spank your husbands on occasion. When do you spank? When do you discipline? What is discipline? How do you deal with those small situations? If we're going to understand what discipline is, we'll have to think rather carefully through the matter. Let me first of all give you a very simplistic definition of discipline and then discuss it in some detail. Every parent is going to have to deal with problem behavior. That simply goes without saying. Here's a simple definition of discipline. Discipline is the parent's corrective response, not punishing response or retributive response. Discipline is the parent's corrective response to a child when he behaves foolishly. Discipline is the parent's corrective response to a child when he behaves foolishly. If I talk at this level, can you hear me in the back? Okay. Discipline is the parent's corrective response to a child when he behaves foolishly. Now, there are two parts to this definition which require study. Two parts that require study. First, what behavior merits a corrective response? Or, when do I discipline? That's part one. What behavior merits a corrective response? When do I step in? When do I overlook? When do I just say, well, kids will be kids? When do I just let consequences, natural consequences for behavior take over? When do I just perhaps scold? When do I step in with real corrective response to my child? That's question one. Question two is, what should my corrective response be? Or, how should I discipline? So we have two questions. When should I discipline? And how should I discipline? All right, we're going to discuss the when question first. When should I discipline? That's the question we're going to try to answer. If you came to this workshop hoping to get a series of formula-like answers a pattern of mechanical advice that you can take home and simply apply in a mechanical robot-like fashion, you will be disappointed, because parenthood is not a formula matter. Parenthood is an art. Parenthood is a way of thinking about your children and being able to take a certain set of concepts and translate them into a specific situation. So what I'm going to do is to try to give you a way of thinking and then illustrate, in a number of illustrations, how that way of thinking would lead to specific behavior in specific situations. But what I want you to leave with is not a bunch of rote answers, but a way of thinking that you can translate then into your specific situations. When should you discipline? In order to understand the question when, we're going to have to ask a prior question. And that is, what's the purpose of discipline? What's the purpose of discipline? Now, let's get a few facts clearly in our minds as we try to understand what the purpose of discipline is. Once we understand that, we'll be in a better position to answer the question, when do we discipline? What's the purpose of discipline? In order to figure that out, we must have a few facts clearly in our minds. Fact number one is that God created the world. If I want to live effectively in this world, I simply must cooperate with the Creator. If I want to live effectively in this world, I simply must cooperate with the way things are. Now, that makes sense to us in the physical realm. If you want to get out of a building, you simply must cooperate with the reality that your body doesn't pass through a wall. You must find a door, you must find an opening, and you must open it in order to get out. That's a physical reality that you simply must abide by. You have no choice if you want to live effectively. The same thing applies to food. If you have a basic conviction that the way to eat nutritionally, the way to be happy in this world as far as eating is concerned, if your basic conviction is the way to be happy is to have pizza for breakfast and subs for lunch and pizza again for dinner, if that's your conviction and you live according to that conviction, what happens to you? Well, you get in trouble. Why? Because your conviction is out of step with the way things really are. You see? There is a reality out here. There's a physical reality. And I must abide by that. If I have a conviction that differs with the physical reality, and I start living according to this conviction, I'm going to get myself in trouble. If I really believe with all my heart that I can walk through a wall and try to live according to that conviction, I'm going to have a lot of bumped noses. Because my conviction does not square with reality. There is a physical reality that I must subscribe to. Now, the important point is this. Not only is there a physical reality, there is a personal reality, or a psychological reality, or a moral reality, whatever word you choose to use. There is a reality that I must bow before if, in fact, my marriage is going to work. There are certain rules of relationship. There are certain rules of how I'm supposed to live, not physically, but interpersonally, psychologically. And if I do not live according to those rules, I'm going to get myself in trouble. I'm going to get myself in trouble. Some time ago, I came home from work, and I worked hard that day, especially hard, got home around 6:30 and had to leave at 6:45 to go to an elders meeting at our church. So I ran in the door, grabbed a bite, and ran out, went to the meeting, got home around midnight. And I was really feeling very noble. You know, really worked hard. Boy, what a full day. What a guy I am to work like that. You know? Now, when I'm feeling that way, I would like my wife to verbalize agreement with that. So I got home around midnight, and I came to bed. My wife was sitting up, and she had been home. She had been home all day. I hadn't gone to an elders meeting that night. I felt she had it really kind of easy that day. And I thought that she should express appreciation for how hard I work. And I thought what she should do was say something like, "Larry, it's like a back rub, or get you ginger ale," or... You know what she did? I came in at 12, really tired, wanted a word of appreciation, and she said, "Let me tell you about my day." You know what I felt like doing? Felt like snapping at her, saying, "Your day? You think you had a day? You know what kind of day I had? Bible says submit to your husband's wife." That's what I felt like doing. Now, I could have done that. Suppose I had chosen to behave according to how I felt. What would have happened to my marriage that night? What would you guess? The point is, there's a moral reality that exists. God says, "Larry, accept your wife and minister to her needs." Now, that's simply a reality, just like a wall is a reality that I can't walk through. If I try to, I get in trouble. If I go against God's commandments with my wife, what happens to my marriage? that gets in trouble. So I remember sitting there in bed, angry with her, and saying to myself, but I don't want to conform to that reality, God. That's my foolishness, do you see? I really believe that things would be better if I could snap at her and express my anger. But I made a decision. God, I think you're right. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to choose, totally against my feelings, to do what you tell me to do. And so I said, tell me about your day. And our marriage was good as a result. There's a moral reality. God says, love one another. Don't grumble. Anybody grumble yet today? God says, don't do it. Put other people's needs ahead of yours. Don't seek after wealth. Be deeply concerned for other people. Be kind. Be helpful. In short, God's program for life is precisely the opposite of what my kids think is where it was going to work. God's program for life, God says, this way works. My kids say, no. This way works. They have a conviction that they can walk through walls in the moral world. They have a conviction that they can go in wrong directions. Now, with that understanding in your heads, understanding that, that there really is a moral order, let's call that the moral order. And here I am in the middle of this world, and if I say to myself, no, that moral order doesn't exist, I can really be happy not by cooperating with this moral order. I can be happy by getting what I want. Then I choose to live according to getting what I want. What happens? I bump into this reality, and my marriage starts breaking up. And my friends and I don't get along. And I begin not having a very good life. Things start going wrong. And I can't figure it out. And I get mad at God and mad at you. But I'm a fool. If I live foolishly against that moral order, my life doesn't work, but my kids think it will. Now, let me give you the purpose of discipline with that as background. Listen to this. Discipline is the process by which Discipline is the process by which parents demonstrate to their children. Discipline is the process by which parents demonstrate to their children that going against God's order does not lead to happiness. Discipline is the process by which parents demonstrate to their children that going against God's order does not lead to happiness, that demanding one's own way is personal suicide. If you don't believe that, you will not be an effective parent. Discipline is the process by which parents demonstrate to their children that going against God's order does not lead to happiness. They think it does. They're foolish. They think that getting their own way leads to happiness. Discipline is the way that I teach them that their conviction is wrong. That what they believe is true is in fact a lie. Discipline is the process by which parents demonstrate to their children that going against God's order does not lead to happiness, that demanding one's own way is personal suicide. If there is this moral order which exists, and my child is born believing the moral order does not exist, then my job as a parent is to teach my child that this personal order exists by representing this personal order in my home. I draw a little circle around my child that fits, that represents that larger moral order. Are you following me? Think of it this way. What do you do when your little toddler moves towards an electrical outlet? It looks like a fun toy. His curiosity impels him to put his finger in there. Now, the child believes what? What a neat thing to do. The child believes that will bring me great delight. That's his belief. You as a parent know better. You know if he gives in to that particular belief, if he operates according to that belief, if he believes that touching the socket is fun, when he touches the socket, what's going to happen? He's going to be in big trouble. So what do? You try to give him a sample ahead of time of what would happen if he went further. A less extreme example, but still an example in kind. So what do? As he reaches his hand towards the socket, you go like this. Why do you go like that? What are you doing? You're saying if you continue in that direction, there's going to be more pain. If I can deter you from going in this direction by giving you a little bit of pain now, in order to spare you from getting all the pain that you're going to get if you go all the way. If I can deter you from doing that, then perhaps I can encourage you to lead the kind of life that in fact will bring you joy. Child, you're dead wrong. You think getting your own way will make you happy. That's not true. And I'm going to see to it that you understand that. Let me illustrate. Some time ago, my son called me from a friend's home. He was playing in a neighbor's house on a Saturday afternoon, and he gave me a call. He said, "Dad, Mrs. So-and-so is going to take us all to Kmart. Can I buy a gun?" "How much money do you want to spend, son?" "A dollar." "Do you have it?" "Yes." "I know he did." "Want to spend a dollar?" "There's a particular gun I saw there, and it cost 99 cents or something. May I spend a dollar?" I said, "Yes." I made a decision. "On what basis?" "You just make a decision." I said, "Yeah, I think it'll be all right. But spend no more than a dollar." "Is that clear?" "Yes, Dad." "What'd I say, son?" "Spend no more than a dollar." "That's what I said, son. Don't forget that." "Okay, Pop. See you later." An hour later, my son walks in the house with a gun that cost $2.59. What happened? I had given him a certain responsible authority, which I thought made sense. Appropriate stewardship of money, as opposed to just taking your money and spending it for whatever you want. If I do that, take all my money and just get whatever I want with it, as opposed to using it to minister to the needs of others, I'm going against God's direction. So in an effort to try to teach my child the reality of the way the world works, I limited what he could spend. He said to himself, essentially, I doubt if these words went through his mind, but obviously his foolishness took over. And he said, "You know, I can be a lot happier if I forget about Dad's authority. That dollar gun doesn't compare with a gun for $2.57 or whatever it was. Therefore, I'm going to set aside Dad's responsible authority, and I'm going to buy that gun for $2.57. What would you have done? Seems rather small, doesn't it? You know, a buck and a half, that's not a big deal. So it's a gun. He doesn't do it regularly. It's no big deal. When I saw that gun that he brought home, what I said to myself, I said, "My son has cancer." It's exactly what I said. What would you do if you discovered a little mole on your child's body? It was a wrong color and had all the signs of cancer. Would you put a bandage on it? Give him an aspirin, send him to bed? Of course not. You take him to a surgeon. You let the surgeon put a needle to numb the area and get a knife out and gouge it off. Isn't that what you do? Why? You don't want that cancer to spread. Foolishness spreads like cancer. My son has spiritual cancer, and the symptoms were showing at that particular point. I don't want that to spread, because as that cancer of foolishness spreads and takes over, my foolish son becomes an adult fool. I don't want that to happen. So I took out my knife and I gouged out his foolishness. How? I spanked him. He did wrong. Took him in the back room where we have our special form of love. It's interesting. All of you parents, I'm sure, have told your kids this is my way of loving you in a special way. And one time when I told my child it was time for Dad's special form of love, he said, "Dad, couldn't you love me a little bit less?" Took him in the back room and I spanked him, explaining why, that he had set aside my authority. I told him it was foolish, my responsibility before God to spank him for that. I did so. I took him to Kmart. He turned the gun back in and got the money back. And that was it. Except I did something which I'd never done before. It may not be the wisest thing, but I'll share it with you anyhow. After we turned the gun back in and he got the money back, it was his money. So he kept the money. Nothing wrong with that, as far as I could tell. He had been spanked. The gun was returned. Know what I did? As he was off in some other part of Kmart, I went and bought him the gun with my money. I don't normally do that. And I went and I said to a very surprised youngster who had no expectation of getting the gun, I said, "Son, let me teach you what the word grace means. Grace means undeserved favor. You know what you deserve? Nothing. You know what you're getting? The gun you wanted." That's heaven and hell, isn't it? God said, "Larry, what do you deserve?" And if I agree with his estimate, the answer is hell. He says, "But I'll tell you what grace means. I'll give you heaven. All you have to do is admit you were wrong and trust me as your Savior." So I use that opportunity to teach my child the meaning of grace. My responsibility is to recognize if my child is foolish going against responsible authority, believing that the way to be happy is to get his own way and not to submit to authority, that at that point there must be discipline. Now, if that's the purpose of discipline, to teach my child that his conviction that getting your own way will lead to happiness, to teach my child that his conviction is wrong, if that's the purpose of discipline, a couple of principles emerge that I hope will be helpful to you. First is this. If that's the purpose of discipline, certain principles of discipline emerge. First is this. Discipline is not a power struggle. Ever have the attitude, I'm going to make that kid shape up? That teenage daughter of mine that's drinking, I'm going to see to it she stops drinking. An 18-year-old kid of mine that's skipping out at night, forgetting all about his homework in his senior year of high school and smoking pot, I'm going to see to it that kid stops it. You're prime for a power struggle, Mom and Dad. You've missed the point of discipline. Discipline is not the effort to see to it your kids change. Discipline is rather the effort of parents who represent to their children the reality of a moral universe with which we must cooperate if we're to live an effective life. Secondly, discipline is not coercion. It isn't a power struggle, and it's not coercion. You've all finally recognized, haven't you, that there's not one parent in this room who knows how to control his kid. Isn't that right? None of us can control our children. I can't control my patients. I can't control my wife. I can't control my kids. I can't control people who listen to me lecture. I can't control anything except me. What do I assume responsibility for? The minute you assume responsibility to make your child change by coercion, to force your child to change, you're set up for developing a strong case of resentment against your kid. Here you are here, and if your goal is I'm going to see to it that my child changes by force, I'm going to make him do right. I'm going to force him to do right. You know, your child now has the opportunity to block your goal. What happens when a goal is blocked? Resentment. A lot of parents are really mad at their kids. Whenever I hear parents who are angry at their kids, I know that the parent has the goal of changing his child. That must never be a parent's goal. A parent's goal is rather not to change his child, but to be an effective parent. You can be an effective parent and have a bad kid. Y'all believe that? God in the Old Testament was, wasn't he? He raised the children of Israel properly. Did he make any mistakes? How'd they all turn out? Isaiah chapter 6 or 7, is it? Where the Lord said, where God said to Israel, I planted a garden, talking about Israel. I planted good grapes. I tilled it and I fertilized and made the sun to shine and the rain to fall. I did a great job. You know what I got? Wild grapes. A lot of parents are so guilty. Talked to a missionary once whose child was going very much in the wrong direction at age 17. And the missionary was saying, maybe I shouldn't have come to the mission field. Maybe I shouldn't have sent away the kid to boarding school. Maybe I did this. Maybe I did that. Maybe I did the other. And I said, wait a minute, what's all this guilt about? You're assuming that if you did everything right, your child would be totally right. But that isn't true. God did everything right, and Adam and Eve blew it, children of Israel blew it, and I blew it. I assume no responsibility for my children. But I assume total responsibility for myself as a father. To do what? To faithfully represent to my kids that their foolishness conflicts with God's moral order, and I'll arrange consequences that are within my control to arrange. My children will have to make up their own minds how they choose to live. When they choose to live in a wrong way in my home, rather than trying to change my child, I will try to see to it that I faithfully represent God's reality to my child by arranging a negative consequence. Discipline is not coercion, forcing my child to conform to reality. Discipline is representing God's moral order to my kids. Is that a somewhat new way of thinking for you? It is for some, isn't it? Terribly important. Boy, I wish you'd lay hold of that. If you get one thing out of this weekend, get hold of that. That you're not trying to change your kids. You're going to go home and you got new techniques, now you're going to go to work. No, 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 no. Discipline is learning how to be an effective parent. And I can be an effective parent no matter what my kid does. Therefore, my child cannot get in the way of that goal. Therefore, I never need resent my child. Third principle that emerges is discipline is motivated by love. So many parents punish when their children embarrass them or annoy them. Such punishment is a way of saying, I don't feel good when you do that, and I want to feel good, so cut it out. Very bad. Biblical discipline is rather a way of saying, son, daughter, if you continue in that direction, if you continue choosing to move in that direction, you'll be miserable. You have the right to continue making that choice. But as your loving parent who doesn't want to see you mess up your life, I'm going to impose a disciplinary consequence of pain in an effort to teach you that choosing this direction will lead to misery. Here's a sample of the misery. And I trust that you'll change. If you choose not to change, there'll be more discipline. If you rebel further, there'll be more discipline. I am going to continue to teach you that you cannot get away with this. I want to teach you that because I love you. I don't want you to mess up your life, son. I love you too much. And yet, because you're a volitional being, you're a choosing being, you can choose to go against my authority. If you do, there'll be consequences. But you may continue to do that. And then your life will be messed up. And I will grieve. I will have deep regret. But I will have no guilt because you made your choices. Y'all have that? Discipline, therefore, is not arbitrary. Discipline is not something which I do whenever I just get upset. Discipline is something which I do when I see my child setting aside my responsible authority and doing what he thinks is going to make him happy. Do you understand when to discipline now? The purpose of discipline, you have it in your heads. Now, when do you discipline? Well, just to reiterate what I've already said, I've answered the question really. I discipline whenever there is a clear expression of raw foolishness. My son, bringing home that gun. That was simple, unadulterated, raw, naked foolishness. And my child didn't come and say, "Hey, Pop, no way am I going to do it your way." He didn't come with that kind of an attitude. But inside he did. Inside he said, "Dad's way is not good, my way is better. Obedience isn't the way to go. God says obedience is the way to go. That's my moral order." My son said, "No way." He's foolish. He needed to be disciplined. What must you do? If you're going to be an effective parent, you're simply going to have to set up clear, well-understood limits that you believe represent this moral order. When you see something going on in the family that's wrong, you're driving in the car, going away on a vacation trip, and the two kids in the back seat are squabbling like mad, what do? You do what I've done on occasion. Some time ago, my wife was speaking somewhere at a seminar she was conducting on a Saturday, and so I decided, good day for Dad to take his kids to the zoo. Put my two kids in the back of my Toyota and go down the highway, down to Miami, to the zoo, and it began to rain. That wasn't part of the plan. And I was a little frustrated. I also had bald tires, made me a little bit nervous. And my son, who was very happy, chose that time to begin singing. And when you're in the back seat of a Toyota, the person in the back seat is not far from the driver's ear. And he was singing at the top of his lungs. Well, I'm driving on a wet highway with bald tires. And this happy kid is there, right in my ear. You know what I did? Well, I thought through all my lecture notes and I maturely turned around and said, "Son, this isn't an effective thing to do at this time." Is that what I did? No way. I said, "Sit back and be quiet." You know what my kid did? "Going to get even with you, Dad. Don't like what you did, Pop." So I ignored him. You know what he did? Picked up a newspaper that it was the back of the car and just threw it across the car. Why? See that, Pop? Get you mad? Is that how you handle it? So I handle it. Wish I had listened to my own lectures. What do you do when problems like that happen? Let me tell you. You set a clear, responsible limit. You set a clear, responsible limit. The kids have messy rooms. You think that's wrong? You make a decision that you think your children, it's important for their moral development to have messy rooms, which I would support you in. So you make a decision. Children, the room will be kept clean, but make sure the decision is understandable to the child. My son's definition of a clean room is very different than my wife's, particularly, definition of a clean room. They think a clean room is one where there's not too many pairs of underpants on the floor. We think a clean room is one where there's nothing on the floor. So we say, "Clean your room." "Got it, Pop." And they go back in and do what they think is cleaning the room. And we go back in and see a dirty room. And we spank them. And the child says, "What happened? I cleaned the room." And he means it. When you make a limit, you make sure it's a very clear limit. "Son, a clean room means da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da." Say it back to me, son. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. You got it? All right, your responsibility now is to clean that room. That's a responsible limit. You've made a clear limit. You've said, this is the way the world works. If you in your foolishness believe that you can be happier by going against my authority, when you in your foolishness transgress that limit I've set up, there is going to be disciplined. If the limit is transgressed, you discipline. Discipline only when you know that a problem has happened, when you know your child has done wrong. Never discipline when you are not sure the offense has been committed. You'll have plenty of opportunity to discipline on the basis of certainty. Wait for that. Don't discipline when you think. When should you discipline? You instruct your six-year-old child never to go to the local park without adult supervision. He simply ignores your instructions and goes, and you find his local park. What do? You say, well, what do you, you know, kids like to go to the park. I guess it's just, you know, the way it is. Your kid has cancer. Time to gouge it out. Your rule is no smoking marijuana. You catch him smoking a joint. And he says, Dad, come on, everybody's doing it. You know, what's wrong with it? You drink. Is there any worse than that? Step one, Dad, is you examine yourself. Maybe the drinking ought to go. Step two is if a limit has been set, a limit that you're willing to follow in your personal life, if that, otherwise you have no basis for discipline at all. You might as well forget about discipline. But assuming that you have followed the limit that you yourself have set, then when the rule has been transgressed, you discipline. Oh, Dad, that's unfair. Don't expect your child to appreciate your discipline. But you discipline. You catch your child stealing. What do? Give him a lecture? I said, you know what, my biggest frustration as a counselor, not my biggest, I have a whole bunch of them, but one of them. One of my big frustrations as a counselor is parents who consistently think that lecturing is going to do the job. Parents who come in and say to me, you know, if my kid would just understand that if he'd be cooperative, we'd get along better in this world. And how many parents are masters at preaching excellent sermons on virtues of patience and cooperation and honesty and all the rest of it, and a kid never gets a message, and the parent just gets more and more frustrated. Why? Well, the cure for cancer is not an aspirin. Lectures do not touch foolishness. Discipline does. You're wasting your breath. You're wasting your breath. You catch your child stealing. It isn't the time for a lecture in the virtues of honesty. It's time for discipline, followed perhaps by some godly instruction. You take away a toy over which your children were fighting. You put it in a shelf and tell them they may not play with it for the rest of the day. An hour later, you discover your child happily playing with the toy. You say to yourself, I hate to mess up his happiness. You know, if I get in there and do it now, I'll just have a hassle when I'm in the middle of getting dinner ready for company tonight. I don't want to cause a problem now. The kid's happy. Is that so bad? Your child has cancer. Let it spread. You're asking for troubles. You deal with that through discipline. Now, how do you discipline? You essentially have three forms. We've answered the question when. Now we'll answer the question how. When do you discipline? Your child's foolish. Secondly, how do you discipline? Very briefly, there's three forms of discipline. Spanking, withdrawal of privilege, and added responsibility. A couple of very brief comments on this. Let me rush through a few comments on these three types of discipline. Spanking. As I mentioned last night, I judge that spanking is an appropriate form of discipline through approximately age 12. Spanking is the application of pain, not humiliation. I believe this, especially with younger children, that children must be required to receive the spanking. What does Hebrews 12 say? And Hebrews 12 talks about the spankings which God gives his children. He says, those who are exercised by the instruction, by the discipline, those who are trained by it, those who submit to God's discipline, are those who become the right kind of people. Therefore, it's my responsibility to do what I can to see to it my child submits to the discipline. Are you the kind of parent who in a fit of rage just gets mad and just, God, and kids, or are you the kind of parent who does it properly? Say, son, it's time for discipline. And if you're super mad, if you're super upset, go take a shower, go walk around a block, go do something. Never discipline when you're uncontrolled. Is it okay to discipline when you're angry? Well, of course. Of course you're angry. You ought to be. But when your anger's out of control, you're in trouble. Take time to get your anger in control. Then what you do is you go to your child and you spank. Now, when you spank, my insistence with my kids is that they submit to that discipline. If they squirm and all this kind of stuff, they get a second one. When they've learned that if they don't squirm, they just get the one. If they'll submit and receive the discipline. Do you discipline with compassion? Do you care as you're spanking your child? When I spanked my child for that gun, first time it ever happened to me, I wept as I spanked him. It hurt me. You know what my child did? It's kind of a shame he had to become a psychologist to his daddy. He said, Dad, it's okay. He thought I was feeling guilty. So I made that clear. In the middle of my tears, I said, "Son, I feel no guilt for what I'm doing, but I feel great regret. I hate to have to apply pain to you. It doesn't give me any thrill at all to do that. But I'll do it next time, too. And I want you to know that." He said, "Dad, it's all right." First time he ever said that. That's spanking. Anything wrong with hugging your child after spanking? Of course not. Should you explain the purpose of spanking? Yes, of course. Second thing, withdrawal of privilege. With younger children particularly, withdrawing the privilege of mobility is good. Confined to room or to chair. With older children, the typical form of discipline, of course, is grounding. When you withdraw privilege, make sure you withdraw something which the child wants. Otherwise, you're not applying pain at all. Added responsibilities, the third form. Don't expect your child to happily perform the extra chore that you give him as discipline. Simply insist they get it done. Don't weaken your assignment because your child complains. You have it? You have the hows? You have the whens? Let me briefly take another 6 or 7 minutes and go over what to do when the goal is attention, when the goal is power, when the goal is revenge, when the goal is withdrawal. Firstly, when the goal is attention. What I've said so far covers those instances where your child clearly and foolishly defies your authority to get what he thinks will make him happy. Now, there are times when you really can't interpret the situation as a clear expression of foolishness, leaving the bike outside. You didn't give any specific instructions. You know, the kid ought to do it, but you didn't give any specific instructions. The kid comes home and tells you a tall story. You didn't give any specified rule, but the kid seems to be getting attention through this, squirming in church, quarreling with neighbors. Perennial procrastination, always late getting ready. Expressions of boredom during the summertime. "Ma, what can I do? Ma, what can I do? Well, why don't you do this? I don't want to do that. Why don't you do this? I don't want to do that. Why don't you do that? I don't want to do that either." What's happening? Child's after attention. What he's saying is, "I don't want to have to responsibly make a decision to do what I might not enjoy doing. I want you to take all the responsibility for making me happy at every moment." Right, now what do? When the goal is attention. Somebody take care of me, attend to me, look after me, without my responsible participation. Most times, the way parents deal with attention struggles, attention-getting maneuvers, most times the way parents deal with it ends up in a power struggle. That ring a bell? "You eat those eggs this minute, young man. School bus is coming. I want those eggs eaten now. I don't wanna." Right away, you're into a power struggle. You got a problem. It's hard to get out of it. So what should you do? Step one. Determine whether the misbehavior clearly violates a scriptural principle, which it may. Determine whether the misbehavior, the attention-getting behavior, clearly violates a scriptural principle. Hitting brother, breaking other people's possessions, being irresponsible by playing ball in the living room. Determine whether misbehavior clearly violates a scriptural direction. If so, then you state a clear limit and then discipline any transgressions. You're back to foolishness. "Son, what you're doing is wrong. Here's the limit. Your attention-getting behavior is something which goes against what I believe to be proper and right. Therefore, here's the limit. If you transgress the limit, there's going to be discipline." No power struggle. You're just saying this is the way the world works. You're not saying you're going to do this. You're saying here's the rule, break it, and we have trouble. That's step one. Do not give the child the desired attention. That's step two. Don't put the bike away for him. Don't marvel at his tall stories. Don't nag the child to hurry up. All of us do that, don't we? Don't nag the child to hurry up. You'll just get into power struggle. In many instances where the behavior in your judgment does not clearly violate a biblical principle, what you should do, rather than setting up a rule and then applying discipline, rather than that, if the behavior does not seem to clearly violate a biblical principle, use the principle of natural consequences. You all know what that is? Principle of natural consequences. A very simple principle. Peter's always late coming to dinner table. And mother, you're just upset, and you say, "Can't you get here by 6 o'clock? You know he's at 6 o'clock every night. Why can't you be here?" You're into a power struggle. Your child wants power over you. So he'll say, "I'll be here," and he'll always be that irritating 3 minutes late or 20 minutes late, whichever really gets you bad. So what should you do? Natural consequences. What's the answer to that? What's the natural consequence of Pete coming late for dinner? Doesn't get dinner. Sure. 6 o'clock, time to eat. Parents sit down and eat dinner. Where's Pete? It's his problem. You eat dinner without Pete. If food is cleared off the table by the time that Peter comes home, that's Peter's problem. If he wants to pick something for himself, he's welcome to have some cold gravy on his mashed potatoes. That's his choice. You know, when I've told parents sometimes that, I've had some parents say, oh, but I couldn't let him go without dinner. That's like saying your child has a serious disease and you couldn't possibly send him to a doctor. The doctor might hurt him. Sally's a picky eater. Any picky eaters in your home? All the persuasion in the world hasn't worked. Threats, spanking, lectures, the whole shot. Nothing has worked. What do? Call one family worked with. They finally decided simply to put the food on the table, the appropriate food that Sally was to eat. They ate themselves without saying a word to Sally. They cleared the food after dinner, and they left the table. They took away Sally's food when it was the appropriate amount of time was up. Sally wasn't permitted any snacks, of course. If she did transgress the rule of no snacks, she was disciplined. Sally began getting hungry, and Sally began complaining to her parents. Her parents were instructed to warmly ignore her complaints. You warmly ignore them, not nastily ignore them. Within 4 days, Sally was eating acceptably. The principle of natural consequences is a very, very powerful principle. Leave the bike outside. And suppose it gets stolen. Well, no bike. Suppose it gets rusty. No bike. You might instruct your child, hey, son, a bike's out there. If I get stolen, you're going to not have a bike. It's going to get rusty. Well, I'll get it, Dad. He never gets it. He has a problem with his bike. A couple of simple principles on attention. When the goal is power, what do you do? When the goal is power, what do? First step is this. You must disinvolve yourself. Y'all know what I mean by power? Power struggles. Y'all know what I mean? And I have a question on that. Power struggle. You're going to eat that this minute. I will not. You'll be in by 8 o'clock. I will not. You'll do your homework 2 hours. I will not. All the kind of power struggles that make up most of our lives as parents. Here are some wrong responses that include involving yourself where you're saying, my goal is to get that kid shaped up and I'm going to make him do it. I've told you a million times to pick up your clothes. Do it this instant. Now you listen here. You'll do what I say. You'll be in big trouble. Is that clear? You're in a power struggle, Mom. In a power struggle, Dad. Step one is disinvolve yourself. Don't let yourself be drawn into a power play by having to persuade your child to do what you say. Just hollering and screaming, you've got to do it. What do? If the child is misbehaving in a way that goes counter to biblical principles, or back to the basics, what do? You state a limit and you discipline transgressions. That's what you do. Suppose your child is sitting in the family room watching TV, it's 9 o'clock, and you say, son, it's time to go to bed. The kid ignores you. What's the usual way of handling that? What's standard? Procedure. Anybody? You wait a couple of minutes, hope he obeys. He doesn't. Then you say it again, a little more sharply. He kind of nods his head in that direction, rustles a little bit to satisfy you, and then watches it a while longer. 10 minutes later, you notice he still doesn't move, so you holler again. Isn't that right? 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 times, and you come to the local psychologist and say, why is it my kid will never move without being yelled at 8 times? What's going on here? What's the problem? Let me tell you what I think you ought to do in a case like that. If your child is engaging in a behavior which you believe is wrong, you say, son, it's time to go to bed. And your son doesn't make a move to go to bed within an appropriate short period of time. First thing you ought to do is help your child obey. So your kids don't naturally want to obey, so you have to help them obey. Now, what does that mean? You walk over and take them by the arm and literally show them. I have literally put a toothbrush in my kid's hand and said, it goes like this. I said, brush your teeth. Got it, Dad. As he... Now, my normal tendency is, didn't you hear what I said? Yeah, I heard what you said. All right, all right. And he goes stomping off like this. Why? That's power over me to get me upset. He knows he has to do it or he'll be in trouble, but he wants to get some power over me because I've hollered at him. Much better to go and say, son, I said brush your teeth. I meant that. Here's how it works. Now, suppose at that point your child gives you problems. Discipline is the time at that point. Go about your business. Don't make a fuss over his misbehavior. You disinvolve yourself. Don't get into power struggle. Stay the limit. Help your child obey. If your child refuses to obey the limit that you've set, it's time for discipline. That applies to all ages of children. Fourth, thirdly, when the goal is revenge, children are going to try to hurt you. Ever had a kid that said, I hate you? Sure you have. Try to make you feel bad. I recall once I tried to make my mother feel bad. She got in the way of what I wanted. My one goal was to get her to feel bad. Boy, I was mad at her. I was mad at her. What do you do when your kid's mad at you and just says, I can't stand you. I wish you were like the neighbor kid's father. And inside, you don't have a mixture of guilt and anger yourself. You know what to do? First thing is understand this. Your child really isn't rejecting you. He's not doing that. Your child's foolish. Your child's foolish. He's simply rejecting wisdom at that point. It'll sound strange, but you must not take it personally. Wives, in the very same way that when your husband looks at some other woman, you must not take it personally. That sounds dumb, doesn't it? But it's true. It isn't because your husband's rejecting you, it's because your husband's a fool. Understand that, you won't be upset. Disinvolvement, step one, dealing with revenge. Step two, do not punish the child for expressing anger. You know, one of the biggest problems people have, adults have today, is how to deal with their anger. 80% of the problems I see in my office are caused by undealt with anger. None of us know how to deal with our anger, it seems. We're so bad at it. Get mad at my wife, at my kids, at my patients, at my friends, at my church, at my pastor, at everybody. I don't know how to handle it. So I just kind of either stick it inside and get an ulcer or blow up and lose a friend. I don't know how to handle my anger so much of the time. And what we do with our kids is when they have a feeling of anger, what we teach them to do is to stick it inside by saying, don't you be angry at me. That's disrespectful. Is that clear? All right. Now he learns more devious ways of expressing his anger. What should you do? Son, I can see that you're angry. I can acknowledge the fact that you're angry. You're mad at me because I wouldn't let you do that. I can appreciate that. It's all right to be angry. It's an emotion that's understandable. And I can accept the fact that you're angry. And I can accept you as an angry child. That's step two. One, disinvolve yourself. Don't take it personally. When the goal is revenge. Secondly, don't punish your child for expressing anger. Verbalize the fact that he's angry. Accept him as an angry child. Step three, make sure his anger does not go in inappropriate ways of expression. Once your child unbiblically, disobediently expresses his anger by going against stated rules, then you're punishing the child, not because he's angry, but you'll punish the child then because he has disobeyed your appropriate rule. I'm going over these things hurriedly. We'll take time for questions in just a minute, or in a few minutes. Lastly, when the goal is withdrawal, a child who won't try anything new, one who is easily discouraged, one who avoids new responsibilities, wants to quit as soon as a problem comes up, is typically a child who's after the goal of withdrawal. Don't make the mistake of getting so frustrated that you just insist your kid go take part in all the activities he's avoiding. For crying out loud, Andy, go play with the other kids. They're not going to kill you. No. Don't do that. Step one, make sure you can accept your child right where he is. How many times, because parents are disappointed, the athletic father whose kid is afraid to play football, the popular mother whose daughter is afraid to go out for cheerleading, and that parent gets so frustrated, and their goal is what? Make that child do something, and the child, you're in a power struggle. Once you make your child do something, or try to, you're in a power struggle. When I first began practice as a counselor, I found myself getting in power struggles all the time with my patients, because my goal was to change these people. And my supervisor said, Larry, you listen to that tape of the last session you had with so-and-so. See how angry you are at them? I said, angry at my patient, but angry at them. Listen to the tape. I said, yeah, I'm angry at them. He said, why? I said, I don't know. He said, your goal is to change them, and they aren't cooperating, so you're mad. I said, well, shouldn't my goal be to change them? Well, of course not. Well, why not? Well, they aren't your puppets. They have a free will. They choose their own way, just like your kids. Therefore, my goal is not to change a patient. My goal is to be a responsible therapist. My goal isn't to change my child, but to be a responsible father. And as I see my child not engaging in appropriate behavior because he's afraid to do it, and I'm inside frustrated, I got to make that kid go out there and play ball. I got to make him try harder. The kid's scared and withdrawn. I can't stand that. No, you're never going to do it right then. Stop and say, wait a minute. I can accept my child right where he is. My goal is to be a responsible parent, not to change that kid. I can accept him exactly where he is, step one. Step two, find some minimal task which the child can accomplish. A minimal task. A step along the way. The parallel is, if you're afraid of water, stick your toes in the shallow end for a week or two. Then gradually move into the deeper end. Find some minimal task. Look at the family whose little girl was afraid to leave her home. So her minimal task was to start playing with the toys in the front porch. Then 10 feet away from the porch. And just had her move gradually away. each time that she was moved away, and she was made to do it, to play on the porch for a little while, as she did that, Mom and Dad were instructed to come out and to warmly praise her for the accomplishment of that minimal task. That's all step two. Find a minimal task and warmly praise for its accomplishment. Step three, structure responsibilities of slowly increasing difficulty for the child. Slowly increase the responsibilities. I used to have a real stuttering problem. I'll mention that a little more thoroughly later. But one of the things that you do when you have a stuttering problem is you find out what you're afraid to do and start doing it. Now, if I, in the middle of my stuttering problem, had been assigned to get up front and give a lecture to 180 people, no way. I just would have gotten sick this morning and made a point to miss it. And I missed a number of meetings as a youngster where I was supposed to preside. I was just scared to death. So that what I learned to do then was to structure small little things that I was afraid to do, like telling somebody my name, afraid I might stutter. So I made a point of doing it. Like going to a gas station and being afraid to ask for $3 of gas, I might not be able to say it. So I make a point to ask for two, when I really wanted three. So I'd avoid saying three. So I made a point to start facing those things. And as I did it, you know what happened? I stuttered worse than ever. And I wanted in the worst way, therefore, to withdraw. Because withdrawal is so comfortable. Whenever I would go to a Sunday school class, and the teacher would start asking the kids to read around, you know, I'd always have to go to the bathroom. I would avoid. I would withdraw. But I finally said, wait a minute, this withdrawal is making my problem worse. So I'll stay there. And that made it worse. So what do? You keep on staying there. Until eventually, I don't even think about stuttering when I face an audience. Doesn't faze me in the slightest, but I had a major problem as a youngster with that. Structure responsibilities of slowly increasing difficulty for the child. And step four, lastly, be very, very patient. It's going to take time. Encouragement to stop withdrawing takes a lot of time. Do you have it? When do you discipline? Answer? When your child is foolish. When your child clearly is going towards that electrical outlet and is going to put his finger in it and you know it's going to kill him. When he's foolishly going against God's moral order, being nasty to this person, doing that thing wrong, setting aside your responsible authority, and you say, my son has spiritual cancer. The biblical remedy, the beauty of spiritual cancer, is there is a sure cure. Foolishness is bound in the heart of the child, but reasoning and persuasion and understanding and love and acceptance will drive it far from him. Is that what the Bible says? No. It's bound in the heart of a child. What drives him? The rod of correction. Discipline is all that'll work. Scrap your lectures, even though they're great sermons for Sunday morning. Let the pastor do it. You forget about your lectures and you just discipline. When there's foolishness, you discipline. How? Spanking, withdrawal of privilege, added responsibility. When there's attention, you don't give your child attention for what he's doing. You don't reinforce his irresponsible behavior and still let things go smoothly. You let the natural consequences of his irresponsibility get him in trouble. And then he'll learn, is the hope, that irresponsible lifestyles don't produce good things. That's attention getting. When it's power, you don't get into a power struggle. You're going to do it my way. You simply set the rules. You sit back. The child's free to make his choice. When he makes the wrong choice, there's discipline. You help your child obey if you can. If he refuses to, you discipline. When there's revenge, what do? You don't take it personally. You accept the expression of anger, but you discipline wrong, disobedient ways of making that anger known to you, but you're still accepting the child as an angry person. He's simply handling it improperly. When there's withdrawal, what do? You set minimal responsibilities and see to it your child engages in those responsibilities and warmly praise your child for that small movement. That's discipline. That's dealing with foolishness, tension, power, revenge, and withdrawal. I hope that's helpful. Think it through. There's some broad principles that maybe can be used. I trust they will be. Next lecture, we're going to be talking about if we're driving out a foolish way to build self-esteem, then how do we start building in a proper way? How do we really give our kids a valid basis of self-esteem?